On this episode of the Fieldhouse Files, I'm hosting an exit interview, carrying on a tradition this time with Jay Michael, who's departing the Pacers beat after 3.5 seasons. And welcome into the Fieldhouse Files, the podcast where I take you behind the scenes with the Pacers, talk to individuals on and around the team, and tell you what you need to know. Well, we're a week into the regular season, but it's far too early to make any grand conclusions. I know that's not something Pacers Twitter necessarily wants to hear about, or people are already making and jumping to great conclusions, whether it be how Chris Duarte's been great, scoring's down, defense is a concern, and the most obvious, the injury list, how it continues to grow, and most recently, Malcolm Brogdon suffering a hamstring strain, Isaiah Jackson being sidelined with a knee injury. That's all very unfortunate, but mostly a lot of overreaction in the first week. So I don't want to get into that just yet. Instead, I want to get it to something that is very intimate and to regarding the Pacers and the coverage of the team. And that's because there has been a change in media covering the team. The Indy Star in the preseason has been without a full-time beat writer for the time being, because in the offseason, J. Michael Faugus took a new job with the Orlando Sentinel as a sports editor. So David Woods has been filling in the meantime and keeping up with tradition on this show. I wanted to have J. Michael on to discuss his time on the beat, covering two different head coaches and coaching staffs. And we also had a deep discussion on being a beat reporter and what is often unknown about the job, those who work in journalism or maybe who aspire to be. I think you'll really enjoy this episode. But before we get into that, I want to make sure you've joined the community at fieldhousefiles.com, the home to all of my writing, and make sure you're subscribed so that you get every single story direct to your inbox right when it is published. That's daily Pacers coverage, $5 a month or just $50 per year. Not too bad for, like I said, daily coverage directly to your inbox. So if you're one of those off Twitter, you don't even have to bother with social media to follow your favorite team. Now let's get into it. My conversation with the Indy Star's outgoing Pacers beat reporter, Jay Michael, the sixth different person in that position since I've covered the team daily since 2012. We're now a week into the Pacers season, but he's fresh into a new job. Jay Michael, congratulations on that gig. And I guess first, explain how that came about and why you looked forward to this new opportunity.
It came about, like, I didn't anticipate it happening. I wasn't really looking for it. I kind of was tired of the beat, not necessarily in Indianapolis, but just doing this grind for a while. You know, yeah. Travel schedule's a beast, and you know you always have to be on, and it was just draining. So I was telling my editor probably a year prior that I was just kind of getting tired of it, and I don't know how much longer I could do it. And this job at the Sentinel came about, you know, I was assistant sports editor. I was the third guy in charge in command back early in my career. This is kind of where I really cut my teeth. Okay. And I managed a staff of, you know, gosh, I must have had 20, 25 regular freelancers and probably about 15 writers and layout editors. This was, you know, pre-internet. So we were mostly, the focus back then was all print, and internet was just really starting to kind of take shape. So I already had a history there. Like I always tell people, the best experience of my career was there, where I learned everything that I know. A lot of stuff that I do now, I learned so much of it there. So I happened to be talking to a guy. There's only like one or two people who are still there from back in the late 90s, early 2000s when I was there. And I called him out of the blue. I shot him an email.
Yeah.
And then we exchanged numbers. I called him because a guy that we used to work with had passed away. And I was, you know, trying to find out what happened. And in the process of talking, and I said, hey, so who's your new sports editor? Because they'd had an opening I'd known for months. I'd never pursued it. And his name's Roger Simmons. And Roger's kind of in charge of the Sentinel now. And he asked, he says, why are you interested? And that's kind of how the conversations really started. And I was like, yeah, I said, you know, not really. I mean, I don't think this can, you know, well, I don't really want to do this. I don't want to do that. But we talked about it and it lined up perfectly. So even though, you know, the job's based in Orlando, I can do the job mostly from my home in the Sarasota, Bradenton area where I live. about 90 minutes away. So that was a huge part of not having to like commute every day, because I wasn't going to do that. So it just kind of fell into place like by chance. I was fully expecting to come back for training camp for the Pacers.
Yeah.
But it just, it's one of those things that just kind of worked out that way. I did. You know, if you'd asked me a month prior, I would have kind of, you say, yeah, I'm coming back. But you know, the funniest thing, Scott, is that the day I got an offer, I swear to you, this is true. The day I got the offer was on August 2nd, which was when signings and agreements started happening in free agency
with the NBA. That's not so convenient right there.
Yeah. I think soon as I put out TJ McConnell, I was able to get TJ McConnell signing. Of course, you know, the big dogs never really want to acknowledge that you beat them on anything. But I put out TJ McConnell signing that I was able to get. And I swear to you, maybe 5 minutes before that, I just hung up the phone and agreed to a deal to come to the Orlando Sentinel. I was tempted to say that about myself just as humor, but I couldn't do it at that point. But that's kind of how it all came about.
Jay Michael has agreed to a multi-year deal. A source close to the situation is well aware of.
It's the iron. I mean, that just blew me away. I was like, man, this is funny. So, yeah. That's how it happened.
And that's going to make for a great story for years to come. You got to love that. And it's funny because they mentioned, like, I've obviously not gone through it, but when you get married and you have a kid and then you have buy a house, seemingly you don't plan on it, but it all kind of happens in a year time, whereas you much prefer to space it out. Well, all this transpired and you were probably making several calls at the same, hey, boss, let me call you back in a second. I got another boss to talk. Like that's hilarious.
It was crazy. It was hectic as hell. And that that came right in the middle of, I was waiting to get the call back on McConnell. And then I got my other call. I was like, hey, here, we got an offer. And they made the offer to me. And I'm like, shoot. Like, so we agreed in principle. It wasn't signed yet, a lot like the NBA free agent deal. So it took another.
I appreciate you using terms that the audience would know.
We agreed in principle, had a handshake deal, but it wasn't binding yet.
And bearing a last-minute setback.
That's basically what happened. And it was just I just was dying laughing to myself, wow, goodness. This is crazy. But that's – and by the way, just for people to be clarified, I was already down in Florida during the whole COVID lockdown because, my wife lives down here, moved down here in 2020 because she works at a basketball program at IMG Academy.
That's awesome.
So we had two homes. We had one in Indy, and we bought one down here in the West Bradenton, Sarasota area. So I was already situated down here. So it was the easiest transition you could possibly imagine.
Familiarity. You already had the circumstances where you're living down there. Very convenient. And as you said, looking for something different, because it's not a complaint about being a beat writer by any means. But you have to understand those circumstances, and it does weigh on you, especially if you're traveling most of the time. And, it's a random – let's take this Sunday. Pacers are going to be off, but guess what? There might be news that transpires. Goga's – we're waiting on his team option, so you're tracking that down. And so while you're off, you're never really off, and I'm not sure people understand that.
Yeah, and it's like – the biggest problem I always have, I don't tell people, if you don't already know what I do for a living, I don't tell people what I do. Like if somebody, when I first moved in the neighborhood, the neighbors asked me, and I just leave it like I'm an editor or a freelance writer or something like that.
I just work down
Not
the street.
Because it really annoys me when people think, if I tell them what I do, they just think I just go to games, sit there on the sidelines, eat popcorn, high five the players. And
hey, can I get some tickets for this game? Can I get some tickets?
Yeah. That's been a lifelong annoyance. It's like, do you go up to a banker or a lawyer and tell them, hey, your job must be fun? It's not that you don't like the job and you don't enjoy what you do.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's an appreciation for it's actually work. And it's a lot of work. And it's really having to balance a lot of different things. And I'm really aggressive in the way I report. So when I say aggressive, I don't, if I piss someone off, I don't care, generally speaking. If it's long as I got what I did and it's right and it's accurate, people are going to not like you or be mad at you for certain periods of time because maybe, they have a vested interest, in certain things not getting out that, hey, look, I'm doing my job, eventually it comes back around where they respect how you do the job, that you were accurate, that you were fair and gave them a chance to do, to respond or to weigh in. And that, you know, there are things, controversial stuff that I've reported. I've gone straight to the people who I was going to say stuff about, write stuff about, and say, look, this is what I have. I'm right now, it's pretty rock solid. I'm going to give you a chance to either respond or to convince me that this is not true. Cause it's going to take a lot of convincing. I'm not giving you my sources, but I can tell you, I know this, that, and that. So I'll lay everything out on the table. Now, I'm not going to do Adam Schefter and give him the story and let him read it and approve it. That doesn't happen. No journalist does that. But I'm going to say, look, these are the pillars of what I have. I'm going to do this, whatever. And so what happens is the whole process of doing this job, beyond the transactions, chasing who's getting re-signed, who's getting traded, who's getting cut, you being in the weeds with that stuff, and it really weighs on you, because you deal with, there's so much coming at you, and you know, it's just a lot, and a lot of it is people skills, but also, to me, I haven't done my job if some people aren't mad at me or isn't ticked at me for some reason, because I'm not being their PR mouthpiece. But I think long term, what ends up happening is they do respect you if you do it the right way. But man, it's like you're handling all kinds of emotions from other people. It's the grind day to day, you know, and you know, with the Pacers, usually somebody's going to end up on the injury list. So you got to chase that. It's just never ending. And so it's not just the physical part of doing the job for me.
Yeah.
It's the emotional balance of just like having to handle that. And I'm going to tell you what the tipping point probably was for me. It was when we were on, I don't know if you were on that trip, the one where we went to Denver, I think it was Denver, Utah.
It always happens that way, yeah.
It was like Denver, Utah, that. Phoenix, Portland.
And yep, I remember that. That was Kobe's death, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that was Kobe's death. Trip. That Portland game. I went running. Willamette River. I went running on that river that day. I did like a 6-mile run that morning before the game. I felt great. But during that run, I was thinking like, man, this trip has really just taken it out of me. I can't wait to get back to Indy. I don't know if I could do another trip like this. Like, it was the last big trip of the season, really. If you looked at that schedule, that was right before COVID hit.
Right.
And I was relieved because I felt like I was at the finish line in terms of, other than a day or two on the road, that was the last like really week and a half.
I will say this. I do remember this, J. Michael, because I had to cancel it. We had a week in L.A. coming up. We had that back-to-back with the Lakers and Clippers. That was the last big trip I was looking forward to. I remember because I had to cancel that one, and I hated it.
Oh, right.
I stopped through Sacramento. But otherwise, you're right. We were mostly through the finish line of the big trips out of the way.
Yeah. And that's for me, that's when I really revisited that kind of brought back some emotions for me. This was even before what happened with Kobe. And, you know, obviously covering the stuff with Kobe was kind of depressing at that game. I didn't really want to be at that game that night. I'd have been fine if they had canceled it and we could have just went back to Indy. But I was just drained, man. And it's not just a physical thing. It's like mentally I was like done. And, you know, it's just crazy. So, yeah, so it's about more than, you know, the dealing with the people. It's the travel. It's the sometimes I'll count the segments of the flights I have to take on a trip like that. I think I have like 8 or 9 segments, and I'm counting down like, hey, I only got 5 left. Oh, I only got 3 segments left. When you start doing that, man, like you're ready to be done. That's
right.
How I was feeling.
The worst part about all that generally is you might be up till 2 or 3 writing a story. And I would, if I could, I'd always avoid that 6 a.m. flight, try to do the 8, 9, 10. But you're still waking up early, and then you got practice at noon, you got a story to write, and you realize, crap, it's 5 o'clock, and I haven't had anything but a granola bar and 3 coffees. This is not a sustainable lifestyle here. Oh, wait, you want to get a run in? Well, you're probably going to have to wait till tomorrow morning because you got this from your editor. Like, I totally get that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it puts it on you. And you know, I'm pretty, you know, I've been to most of these cities before. Like, if you've never done this before and you start doing it for the first time, it's the greatest thing ever. You know, because, I mean, except when you go to places like Oklahoma City and Memphis, then it really sucks. But if you go to actually good cities.
I didn't mind either, just because there's good food that I had there. And it's relatively easy. Your Uber driver's super nice. Like, it's much more, it's an easier experience than, say, flying into New York. And then you got, you know, a wait, and hotels are more expensive. I don't know. There is an easiness, being from Indiana, that I do appreciate going to some of those lower key cities.
Yeah, Oklahoma City's gotten better for me, but I like bashing Oklahoma City just because the team should have never left Seattle, and the fact that it's there
Agreed.
Is bullshit. The NBA needs to rectify that wrong. That's crazy. We should not be going to Oklahoma City for NBA games. That's atrocious. But so Oklahoma City, nothing against you. It's really about the NBA doing what they did. And not being able to go on trips to Seattle, which is really disappointing. But yeah, it's like, you know, there is, if you've never been, I mean, look, if you've never been to Oklahoma City or Memphis or places like that, or Sacramento, it's when you first start doing it, it's great. I mean, but after you do this for a while, like I said, you know, even people in my family, like, I don't even talk about my job in detail to people in my family, because, or cousins or things like that, because they immediately go to this whole, like, it's just partying like it's 1999 atmosphere, doing your job, and I'm getting paid for it. Like, man, it is. Yeah, I mean, it's great. I'm not complaining about it. I'm not, you know, I wouldn't trade my experiences for anything. Well, I would trade it for a whole lot of money, but it's not like it's a job. And it's like,
for sure. But let's be honest, though, we're not in a coal factory. We're not packaging boxes. Like, it's not the hard physical labor, but
it's all relative to your experience.
Completely. Right? I think the three biggest misnomers are, we're just chilling at practice. We're watching the entire thing with a bag of popcorn next to us. We have unlimited tickets. Feel free to ask us for them. And when we travel, of course, we're on the team charter flight. We're riding on the bus, and you're having all the conversation you want. Like, those are the three things that I laugh most about anybody I encounter. And for me, it does get into my life more, because if you're planning, trying to hang out with people and trying to, well, like this weekend, how about Friday? Nope, game. How about Saturday? Nope, game. How about Sunday? Perhaps I got to track something. Like, when it gets into your life, a lot of people around you are like, well, that's the weekend. You don't have anything to do, right? You just have to watch the game and then you're done. Yeah, not exactly.
Yeah, the game is the game is the easy part. Like, just the game itself
Correct.
Is the easy part.
What about,
like,
the 2 hours before, the 3 hours after, the
yeah?
All
they
that.
Think, look, they think we show up for a 7 o'clock tip off at 6:55, right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
sure.
Like, you know, that we're not there, like, you know, at 4:30 or 5 o'clock. We're there before. And my gosh, man, like, yeah, and you're right. Like, the writing late nights, at least for me, when
and
I was at the
we're
Star.
We're both night owls, I think, which helps, but that doesn't make it any easier when you got something the next day, and then the next day, and then you're jamming sleep all together.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's when I worked at the Star, like, I always had to write. I always see I'm a night owl anyway. So I was up to 2-3 in the morning all the time on home, man. Well, at home games, maybe I got to bed by 2 a.m. But there are plenty of nights, because I like 6 a.m. flights, unlike you, because I can't sleep. If I go to bed at 2 or 3, there's no way in hell I can take an hour or 2 hours of sleep and make a 6 a.m. flight. So I generally just maybe stay. I just get off my feet and I stay up and I write. And, you know, I'll do my video breakdowns and I'll cut that stuff up and I'll finish it on the plane. And I like getting to the city where I had to go right away. It's really, there's really no easy answer.
especially being an indie too, is you got to take a lot of connecting flights. Especially, I know I did this more than you, especially if you're really loyal to an airline. And so I'm going to Atlanta, whereas you're taking, you know, the direct American to Charlotte, let's say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I had no loyalty. Hell with that. Yeah. Whatever was easiest for me is And
right,
yeah.
Right.
But no, it was. But yeah, it's like it's a lot of stuff. So imagine compounding that year after year after year after year after year.
For
and
sure.
For a long time. So I welcome just being able to stay in the same place mostly. You know, right now I've been into the office one time since I've been on the job for 2 months. We don't really have an office in a traditional sense that we used to have. We have a smaller scale down office in Orlando, so you don't have to be there all the time. Really, it's kind of on you. It's kind of flexible. And so when I had that opportunity and to get away from that, I'm still involved in basketball. I mean, I'm since the season started, you know, I've kind of gotten back into the mix. I'm going to be at Magic games here and there. I'm just not – I like not being obligated to have to go to every practice or every game. I can just pick and choose when and when I want to go. And that's kind of where the point that I was at in my career, and that's kind of the direction I want to go. And, you know, I can decide to go to, you know, the Tampa Bay Bucks nearby where I live. You know, I could go to – a Tampa Bay Rays game, you know, or whatever, any college football game or basketball game, I can pop up in some of those places too. So I still have media access. It's just that it's a lot more relaxed, and I'm too old. I'm a lot older than you. So yeah, I'm at this point, man, where yeah, I can't keep up that pace anymore.
My first question out of a lot of that is, how strange is it though? Because it had consumed your life, at least here with this beat, in addition to what your work was before here, for the last three and a half years here in Indy alone, where you're talking with the PR staff and whomever else within the Pacers and out elsewhere every single day. And now you can go, you probably still keep in touch, but it does not again consume your life and dictate your schedule.
Yeah, it's, man, that's so great. I feel so good hearing you say that. I feel so good.
You sound like you are happy and at peace, my man.
Oh, man. I feel like hey, man, by the way, I live right down the street from turquoise waters on Anna Maria Island that I can go run on any day and work from coffee shops.
That's so clean living right there. I like it. Yeah, no office. Your office can be a little coffee shop looking at the water with a cup of coffee in your hand.
Yeah, so exactly. So yeah, now it's different. Obviously, it feels strange at first, but I'm already gotten used to being in this role because I'm busy, man. Like, being an editor, like, for me is like, you know, I don't know what most people are used to in the business, because the word editor means different things to different people, but it's not just editing people's content. Like, I'm guiding content, I'm working on long range projects, I'm coaching guys on stuff that they report on, how to basically get better sources, teaching them, because we have
answering questions on Slack.
We need some guidance on that.
You're all over Slack now, huh? Too, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. You can hear that, right?
And that's probably your day-to-day life. You're probably annoyed with that sound because you're communicating back and forth with those under you, probably some above you, and just keeping that open dialogue.
Yeah, and so, yeah, but like, and I have the benefit of being in the field as a reporter. Okay, so when I was at USA Today, I was a reporter, but I was mostly, for the long stretch, I was a cover story writer, a long-form storyteller, which was my strength. And then when you do the beat, as I did in Indy, when you do the beat, you don't have as much time to do long form. I don't have as much time to invest in doing that. But I've been able to do the beat, which is one job. The long form storytelling, I'm telling you, USA Today at that time, I can't speak to what it is now. The person who was in charge of the cover stories, he only allowed like 5-10% of the people on staff to even write for him, because he was very critical of everyone's work, and in a good way. I think he was fantastic. He made me better. But I did cover stories for him. He's like, oh, you can write for me. So I've been on that side of it, of doing long form and how to get information out of people and storytelling, how to interview people. But the beat writing, the day-to-day here, you know, who, what, when, where, and why. And then I had the previous management experience at the Orlando Sentinel as an assistant sports editor in terms of packaging stuff, running the department, that kind of thing. So it's odd being away from the NBA, yeah. But it also was odd for me when I left those other jobs to just be a full-time beat writer itself. The good thing is, though, I will say is, you know, I've always known people all around the league in different jobs and roles before I came to Indy. And I think that's what benefited me the most, covering the Pacers. The one thing I tell writers this all the time who don't understand this, you know, it's always funny when people always try to guess who my sources were on Twitter. That was hilarious. For whatever reports I may have had. And it's like, well, it's a funny thing. If you really want to kill it on the beat, pro tip, you got to know people outside the team you cover. So, and I mean everywhere. Because, you know, people around the league move. Players move, coaches move, executives move, scouts move.
Each other. And so you need to get in that circle as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to keep those people, you got to keep that fresh. So if you ever want to find out what's going on with a team you're covering, You may not be able to get it from the team you're covering, but if they're trying to negotiate a deal or a trade with someone else, mm-hmm. or they've tried to shop someone else, that's where you're going to find it out from. But you got to have the sourcing already in place to do that, to know how to do that, and to be able to leverage that information. And so that made the job easier for me because I had done so many other things in so many other places with so many other people. It just made, when I came and doing the indie job, it made it a lot more, lot smoother of a transition for me. So, yeah, I mean, so I miss, there are times when I'm watching some of these games, man, and I'll think like, man, I miss this and miss that. But yeah, I wish, you know, that would be kind of cool. But I don't really have a yearning like, man, I want to go back to being on the beat. I do not. But having all that experience is obviously beneficial for doing the job that I'm doing right now. But as you and I have joked before, like, you know, you need to get yourself a medical degree as long as you're going to keep covering the Pacers, because my God, man, you might as well go ahead and get your work at IU Hospital on the side or something, get a side gig, because you need to. Yeah.
No kidding, man.
It's crazy. I mean, that's the thing.
Doing the Pacers, you got to
get medical sources. I didn't anticipate that.
One of my stories last year was talking to Caris LeVert's doctor. Like, boom. Like, why would you ever think that would be what you're doing when you're covering a basketball team? And things like that. You had to get in a good relationship with trainers outside of the team so they can at least explain to you what a navicular fracture is. Until TJ Warren, I had no idea that was a thing, right? You're used to maybe metatarsal, metacarpal fractures, you know, hands and feet and ACL, yeah. Achilles. But no, we're learning. I can't even remember what the Malcolm thing was. That hip, it was right during the start of the pandemic. It was the hip that goes to the thigh.
He got hurt against Milwaukee, I think, in that game. Yeah.
I can't even remember what it is.
It's a muscle that attaches on the hip bone, but it goes behind the thigh and attaches somewhere in the thigh.
Why do we know this? This is awful. And that's the thing. And you're right. I feel like J. Michael Moore, over the last really since Victor's injury, I could go back to Paul George, but really since Victor's injury in particular, it feels like I am more of a injury beat reporter than I am a Pacers reporter, right? I'm at Matt Ant's media day today, and people are asking, hey, is Caris going to play tonight? What's Malcolm Brogdon's status? Has Isaiah Jackson, how severe was his injury? Nobody's asking about rookie Chris Duarte and how strong his first week was. They're asking about player availability, and to the detriment, really, of the team and the connection with the fan, that's really hurt the team.
Yeah. I mean, it's, man, injuries has gotten like, I don't, and like with the Pacers, they, look, all 30 teams have injuries. Like, I always say that, you know, all of these teams, you know, when people want to make excuses for why the Lakers didn't win, whatever, it's like, you know what? I don't want to hear about it. I guarantee you we could find a team that's had more injuries to as many starters or significant players. But Indiana, it's weird for me because I feel like Indiana has been unique in terms of the cluster of when they happen, and they're so long term. They seem like it could be a week or two, but it always ends up being a couple of months, right? It's a cluster of guys, and there's these, you're right, it's these weird injuries. It's not like high ankle sprain or, you know, something basic. It's always some stuff that you got to get a medical journal for. But when I was in D.C., when I covered the Wizards, for the longest time, the Wizards were the same way as the Pacers. Maybe I brought some jinx with me or whatever, the Wizards were like that for a long time until recently. It's with the same kind of thing with injuries.
You had that great text to me. I forget which injury it was because there's so many. It was, somebody's got to find the person behind the voodoo doll and fix it. Now I'm wondering if it's you. Three and a half seasons. I'm doing the math.
I'm from the Bayou in Louisiana. So
I'm doing the math here, and it's kind of starting to add up here.
yeah, man, that's a, you know, they do that. I do have some relatives who are French Creole who I think may have cut off a chicken head or two or something in a sacrifice, I think. But yeah, but no. The Pacers with the injury stuff and the cluster of them, and it's all, you know, it's like always, remember last year, wasn't it Turner? Was it Turner and then Sabonis?
Turner having turf toe playing basketball? Like,
yeah.
What? Yeah. All of these things are just so random, like it is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's pivot out of that. I want to get back a little bit about you in this gig. Something I've never had to do is come on a beat and be the new guy. You had covered the Wizards, I think, for several years before arriving to the Pacers. You come in late in the season, so you're trying to familiarize yourself with the personalities. You know the people from just watching the game from afar. But what is that like as you try to start up and earn your place, I guess, on the beat and in the daily coverage of the team?
I mean, I already had a relationship with Nate McMillan before I got here,
okay.
Before I got there. So, I covered him before. I did the Wizards for 5-6 years. And before that, I was a cover. Like I said, I did cover stories. Then I was on the NBA beat at USA Today for a while. Kind of really when, you're doing national stuff, you don't really have a team. You just kind of bounce around wherever you need it. I was mostly covering stuff out west, and I spent a lot of time in Portland. And that's how I know Nate McMillan from my time there. So I felt comfortable coming on the beat because of my relationship with Nate.
Good.
Did you know anybody in Indiana?
Did you know anybody in Indy? Meaning like just to hang out with or relationships?
No.
See, that's another transition that's got to be difficult.
Yeah, it is. My wife is better sourced than I am. My wife knew people there. She was good friends with somebody who's now gotten promoted to an NBA assistant coaching job in the Western Conference. And, my wife worked at the NCAA briefly when she was there for about a year while she was there. And so she knew people there and people who were from there who we would have lunch with and all that stuff. But I didn't know anybody personally myself. So that's different, but I was fine coming on to the beat because, like I said, with Nate, and my thing is, whenever I would go into a situation, like I remember the first time I talked to Nate McMillan. Make sure we're clear with Nate I'm talking about.
Now
Nate.
You have to, yeah. Old Nate, new Nate.
Yeah, Nate, not Nate 2.0, but Nate McMillan. And so I remember the first time I talked to him, and we met up and at the arena before game. We were chatting it up, and we started talking about the team. And I already knew everything about the team in terms of I knew his play sets, I knew their coverage, what they did against certain situations. I knew some play calls themselves. And he started laughing. He's like, "Man, you haven't changed, have you?" I was like, "No." I was like, that way when you go into a beat, I was talking to a writer recently who was kind of new to an NBA beat. I says, "Well, look, I'm not going to, you don't have to understand basketball the way I do, but it will make it easier for you if you do, because when you go into it, especially you go into a new beat, so the coach A isn't talking over your head. B, they talk to you a different way one-on-one. Because it's one of those things where they assume like, okay, you already know this is what we do in this situation.
They don't have to waste time getting to the point. They can just
exactly.
Explain,
and so
explain
it actually
matters.
Makes it easier to get info.
Yeah.
But I think over time, what ends up happening is they tend to talk to me in a different way. In that, like, getting information generally is easier. And not just with coaches, with people in general. And Nate and I, like I said, we already kind of were on that wavelength. So I just related to him well as a result. And it wasn't hard for me. And that's – so if I was going into a new beat somewhere and I was telling somebody, I was talking to – I know that the guy who's replacing me there at the Indy Star, I talked to him extensively.
Nice.
About the beat and what it was like and, how you got to go about doing things. And it's kind of like, most of it, no matter what you get – no matter what, whether you're an X's and O's guys or you're a storyteller, whatever, it's all about people skills. And if you don't deal with people well and you don't know how to finesse that, it might be a tough job for you because you're going to have to – have people skills. If you have really good people skills, and when I say good people skills, I don't mean being an ass kisser, but I mean having people skills, knowing how to, when to be the bad cop, when to be the good cop, when to put down your recorder and just talk to people about stuff that has nothing to do with anything you're reporting, and just kind of sometimes you got to put down your recorder and bond with people as people.
Get to know the guy. Yeah.
And don't worry about don't make it seem like you're trying to steer the conversation away. Talk to them the way you and I would talk if we were having a beer and having dinner somewhere and just talking about stuff. Like, to where you can actually be yourself. And you get a real sense of who they are, really. and they get a real sense of who you are, really. And then maybe a year down the line, 6 months down the line, that pays off in some way. And so you're really planting roots. And so you got to know, you know, when I'm going to tell you a little anecdote. This, when I was first came out in the business, I was a news reporter at a tiny newspaper called the Lenoir News Topic, which is in the foothills of North Carolina. And it's a terrible town. I don't know what it's like now. Okay. It's a pretty area, but it was terrible. Back then, it was a furniture town. So it all, on certain days, it always smelled like pine sol and bleach. And, you know, it was, it probably took a few years off my life just living there from the fumes I inhaled. But I remember covering a trial because I was doing news, and these two kids got killed on campus at a high school. This was before, it wasn't a school shooting, it was a stabbing at school. And we were covering the trial, and there was a girl who covered for the Charlotte Observer, which was about, Charlotte was about an hour away. And we go up after the verdict. And after the verdict happens, the father is in, like, the father, one of the kids who got killed, he's distressed because the guys who killed his sons, it was no debate who killed his sons. They got all free. They were cleared, called not guilty. And I had a pretty good relationship with them because I had talked with these people for months leading up to the trial, like not reporting, just kind of bonding with them. This girl comes from Charlotte. She doesn't know him. She's trying to be the ace reporter, trying to get the scoop. She goes up to the father after he's crying in distress and says the classic, it's almost cliche, "So how do you feel?" And puts the recorder in his face. And you know what happens to her? The wife or the mom of the kid punched her out right there on the scene. So what I'm saying
is, welcome to the beat.
Yeah, people skills. Yeah. You have to know you can't do that or you shouldn't do that. If you look and hear and see and smell, you know how they feel. You can tell the story from the scene. You don't even have to ask that question. You shouldn't ask that question, but you don't even have to ask that question if all your other senses are working. And that's what I mean, like having people skills, knowing when to say when, you know, and in other times, you know, there's times that you press, but that wasn't one of them. And that was like, yeah. And I was 22 years old when I saw that, and that stuck in my mind for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's a great way to get started in the business, and a wide opening observation that you're able to make here. Did you have any favorite favorite spots in Indy? Any go-to places that you'll miss?
Oh, I always went to, man, every, I think it was it Saturday? I can't remember, it was Saturdays or Sundays. I always went to Renee's down in Broad Ripple.
Okay.
To get, because my wife liked their raspberry, the dessert place. I always liked their almond croissants, and my wife liked their raspberry, not a tart, but they had this raspberry thing, or strawberry, that she loved, like a strawberry cheese Danish or something like that. So Renee's was my go-to. To me, that was the best damn pastry place ever went. So there downtown, probably I like Union 50 the best.
Yeah, that's a good spot for sure.
Yeah, when the Pacers played Boston in that series, Jaylen Brown was looking for a place to go one night, and with one of his people, and they were, he asked me, and I sent them there, and I got a message the next day, like, "Hey, bro, That was good. That was good. That was a good pull, man. We enjoyed that place." It was after one of those games where the Pacers only scored like 72 points or something and lost.
So are you talking about this week or a couple years ago?
No, a couple years ago. No, playoffs. I know. Remember? Oh yeah,
they've averaged 103 points per game over their last three. It has not been pretty. But by the way, you're right. Union 50 is a spot. I know at least in the past, several, Kyle O'Quinn loved that place, for example.
Did he? Yeah.
And several other guys, but
that was a weird guy.
I know.
By the way, Livery, is it pronounced Livery?
Yeah, with the rooftop.
College. Yeah.
Relatively speaking, in Indy, there aren't many rooftops here, unfortunately. But that's a good spot as well.
That is.
I know you're busy, so I want to wrap up. However, I'm sure Pacer fans would like to hear your observations here in the early going. The Pacers front office essentially decided to run it back here, part four, with Domas, with Miles, Malcolm at the point guard spot and such. Was that the right move in your mind? And what do you make of how they're getting started in the Rick Carlisle era?
Yeah, I think a lot of that had to do with Rick Carlisle wanting to see what he could do with what they had. I mean, I don't think. I know that's what that was the reason. I talked to Rick.
He's not trying to rebuild either. So.
Yeah. Same day he got hired, he and I were talking, and I knew he wanted to see what he could do and what they had, if he could make it work. But I would say, you know, before the trade deadline, I think you're going to see something happen in terms of the roster construction. They've tried it now, what it would be three different coaches now.
Yep.
And it's still not quite right. I mean, it's still early. I know that. But I was looking at Toronto game and looking at Scottie Barnes and OG Anunoby, the matchup issues they create. I don't think a team – I know the logic is, hey, if, you know, we played Miles and Domas, teams are going to have to match that, meaning they're going to have to match their bigs with bigs. And no, they don't. I mean, I think it's pretty clear. OG Anunoby and Scottie Barnes, yeah, that's all. That, I mean, one of those guys is a rookie. I mean, geez,
he was really good. He had a better game than Chris Duarte in that one. Those are two fun guys to watch now in the league.
Oh yeah, Barnes is. My wife used to work for Coach Hamilton in Florida State. I think he was out of town. He was supposed to be at our wedding, but she reached. I told her. I said, hit up Coach Ham. This was last season. I said, tell Coach Ham, man, Scottie Barnes, if he doesn't know yet, and this was like early in the season for Florida State, if he's not clear already, tell him Scottie Barnes is gone after this year. Make sure he's clear on that, because that dude ain't staying. I had tweets on Scottie Barnes early last year at Florida State, like how much I loved him. And you never know how guys are going to translate, because the NBA is just a different beast. My goodness, he's going to be really good. Like, he's really good. And I think that's kind of – the Pacers are always going to have trouble with teams like that who can do what Toronto does, and that has those 6'8", 6'9", long athletic guys who can post up smaller guys, who can bang with some of the bigger guys in the post, even though they're undersized.
And then they just smother Domas the whole game like they've done before.
Yeah, but remember the first time Toronto played the Pacers last year, I think it was down when they were playing in Tampa – OG Anunoby destroyed Sabonis. Absolutely destroyed. I'll never forget, it was a 30-point game. He spread from three. Domas was he was banging with Domas in the post. Now, he had help. Obviously, he couldn't do it by himself because Domas is a big, strong guy. But he was strong enough and physical enough to stand up Domas, keep him off of his preferred spots in the mid-post or the low post. And then the help would come because they can anticipate which way Domas is mostly going to go to his left hand.
Yep.
And that's where in the traps or the second, third defender is based on where they think or anticipate he's going to turn. And, you know, he's either going to take a bad contested shot, or he's going to have to make a forced pass, or the shot clock's going to be so low that even if he makes the right pass, the Pacers can't get a good shot. So that's just a matchup problem for the Pacers no matter what. And I think Toronto just has their number. I think going forward, the Pacers, they're going to have to make a decision on what exactly they're going to be. And I think I understand why they wanted to run it back to give Rick Carlisle a chance. But if you look at how Toronto defended him in that game the other night, you know, they tried to go high low by getting Sabonis to pass it into Turner, who had a mismatch in the post. But guess what? It didn't work because they don't respect Domas's ability to spread the floor. So his defender was sagged way back. So when he tried to make the entry pass to Miles, who had a small guy on him, there was no space to get the pass in. They basically were saying, hey, Domas, if you want to take that 18, 20-foot jumper, go ahead. But you're not going to get this into Miles against a 6'5" guy in the post. And it led to bad position. You can't really run high-low like that if a defense is playing as intelligently as Toronto played. And that's going to be a problem for the Pacers in a 7-game series if they make the playoffs and a team has those kind of pieces to deal with the Pacers' size. That's how they neutralize it. And, you know, it's going to be an ongoing discussion until they pull the trigger on something. Now, what will that something be? I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not in the mix anymore. But I think they have some decisions to make going forward. You know, it's. I think it's necessary. I mean, if the making a playoffs and getting bumped in the first round, right, that's no longer acceptable. You're talking about restructuring teams so you can get out of the first round and have a chance. And that's what really the goal is. So think to yourself, what has to change in order to accomplish that? I think you have to do a couple of things.
It's been bizarre to see this franchise not get out of the first round since 2014. Since Paul George. It's been that long. And those were great years, the 2012 and 13 seasons when they went back-to-back years in the conference finals. And you're right. But last thing, you'll get a kick out of this. Less than a week into the season, back-to-back home games. You had the Miami Heat broadcasters come in, and then Steve Ashberger, NBA.com. Back-to-back games, I kid you not, J. Michael. Both of them asked Rick, so how are you handling Domas and Miles? How do you think that situation? And I kid you not, the second time, Rick goes, I think we're tired of that. I'm tired of that conversation. We're all tired of it. He had been a week into the regular season. So just imagine how he'll feel in a month, 2 months, or how all of us feel kind of after 4+ years now. So
yeah,
still
nah,
in the
no
front,
doubt
forefront
about it.
Of all our minds and just kind of waiting for something different. I think we've seen it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's about, I think part of it too, with Kevin Pritchard, and I'm guessing he's like, you know, you're trying to strike. You know, Kevin's been really good at striking when an iron is hot when it comes to trades. So, you know, like, you know, Oladipo started after coming off that injury, started to play okay. He wasn't great, but he was still solid. And you flip that into LeVert, trade early, move on early. You know, his MO has been, you know, when he moved Paul George, to not drag it out and to try to get it over with, but also try to get as much trade value as you can before you do something. So I just think because there's inaction maybe early on, and I know people are going to get stressed, I wouldn't worry about that. I would say whoever you think or believe that they will trade or should trade, whoever that may be, I think if that person has a good stretch where they're starting to play good basketball and people are saying good stuff about them, that's when you strike. Because – and I think that's what his mentality is.
Absolutely.
So that's why you're waiting.
I appreciate the time, J. Michael. Glad we were able to get this exit interview completed, and wish you well there down in South Florida.
All right, man. Thank you.
My thanks to him for joining. I feel bad for him. He had an unusual set of circumstances joining late in the season, had a postseason run, really first-round series against the Celtics, and you had a COVID-shortened season that finished up in a bubble down in Florida. Then you had last season, which was shortened, not played in front of a true fans, didn't get a real experience at the field house, and then yet another coaching change twice in a year. Very unusual, and then now taking on a new job. But I think it was good to hear his perspective, both in covering the team, moving to a new city, something I have not done to join a new beat, and what, you know, it's weird going there and not knowing anybody, right, and trying to not only command and understand your beat, but at the same time learn the city and places to go and hopefully meet people as well. So I hope you enjoy that conversation about that, and a heavy focus, a heavy lean on journalism as well. That does it for this episode of the Fieldhouse Files podcast, and I'll talk to you again soon.